Back together again, you and I, Tuesday, September the 19th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the program talking about the latest news concerning the Bridgeport absentee ballot probe. And we also welcome Stratford GOP State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly on that subject. And later on, Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by as well for her weekly update. Yes, the award-winning miniseries, streaming miniseries Bridgeport is back for another episode. How are you? 216-203-333-942-233-WICC. As you just heard there from Chris on the news, John Gomes saying his campaign is due to file a lawsuit sometime today, according to Hearst here. So I guess it would have to happen in the next 3 or 3.5 hours, depending upon when the business day ends at whatever law firm they're using, because I know some places go till 5, some go till 5:30. But John Gomes here says his campaign's going to file a lawsuit to try and overturn the primary results from last week. This, of course, after videos were posted online showing items, we're not sure what they were. They look like envelopes, but showing items being inserted into an absentee ballot box outside the government center. Okay, so we'll see. I'm guessing perhaps those weren't Christmas cards. I don't know. Don't know whether they were thank you cards for anything. I don't know. And again, I'm trying to play. We're playing this on this show. We're going right down the middle. We have the question of how the video was obtained. No info there yet on that. We have the question of who exactly is in this video. There are allegations of who it is. We're not going to allow those to be on the air. Just to be fair, what that person is doing, who knows? The lawsuit from the Gomes campaign, set to be filed in State Superior Court downtown, seeks to prevent certification of the Tuesday primary results and will request a new primary be held. Now, I know there are a lot of people saying, oh my God. Well, listen, there's that old adage, don't rush things, get it right. I'm sure the 150,000 fine people in the city of Bridgeport can survive if the primary has to be redone. Yes, it'll cost money. They'll figure out how to do it. And listen, I don't live in Bridgeport. I don't have a horse in this race. I look at this from afar. I rely on you folks who live in the city to give me, to be my eyes out there and my ears on the ground to what's going on. But just get it right. There are a lot of people saying, well, we have to get this out. Well, yeah, you'll get it done. It's a municipal primary in a city of 150,000 people. You can do this again on a month or two notice. And for whatever reason, if the mayoral election, the actual election, is pushed back a month or so, well, then it's fine. People are okay. There's not that nobody, no power is going to come down from the heavens, you know, and hit some sort of demonic lightning bolt on McCleavy Green there. It's not, everything will be fine. We just have to get it right. Gomes and his campaign, again, back to the Hearst story here, calling for a state police investigation, as Connecticut GOP party leader Ben Proto on Monday called for tougher penalties for illegally handling mail-in ballots. Now, which leads to this. And a lot of you folks are a little confused about what the alleged crime may be here. And I go out of my way to use alleged because we haven't proven anything yet. There's a video out there. There are lawsuits or maybe countersuits. Who knows? Connecticut law, let's just lay this out. Some people, you know, that aren't really policy wonks are saying, well, they're absentee ballots. What's the problem? Well, here's the problem. Connecticut law limits who can handle and turn in absentee or mail-in ballots. individuals are allowed to vote absentee under certain conditions that prevent them from voting in person. The ballots can be mailed or dropped off. But, all right, and this is, before we go to the phones here, this is the issue in question. It may not necessarily be, and again, we don't know what, you know, what exactly was in those envelopes. So the ballots themselves, you have to understand something here. The ballots themselves may be okay. They might, but it's who is handling the ballots. Current state of Connecticut law allows only election officials, designated caregivers, and family members to possess completed ballots. So again, understand what the big contention is here. And there are basically three things here. Who is handling those ballots, ostensibly, if they're ballots? What's in the envelopes? We're assuming they're ballots. And where'd the video come from? That's it. It's not that hard. But again, state of Connecticut law allows only election officials, right, and you know who that would be, designated caregivers, you know what a caregiver is, and family members to possess completed ballots. Says here again, when voters fill out absentee ballots, candidates and their supporters are prohibited from being in attendance. All right, now, come on. That's about as close to unenforceable as you're going to get. But I digress. Back to the Hearst story here. Fines of up to $2,000 for each violation can be assessed by the State Elections Enforcement Commission, but those found guilty in a court face up to 5 years in prison and $5,000 in fines. And you see these cases pop up from time to time across the country. You'll see somebody actually. Now, I'm not saying anybody should go to jail here or be fined, but some jurisdictions are rather tough on this stuff. Dorothy in Bridgeport's with us. Dorothy, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Paul, I have a horse in the race.
Okay.
I've been here now in my condo for 33 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I wrote down because I was listening earlier to Lisa Wexler. Mm-hmm. We have a mutual friend, and he wrote a book only in Bridgeport.
Okay.
And what I want to say, because there was a Barbara who called in, and I hope Barbara's listening. Mm-hmm. I'll take myself off speakerphone.
Okay.
Barbara came to the United States legally, and she knows what we all know, how important it is to vote. And I am going to say, going forward, we can turn this around, folks. This situation could be a blessing in disguise,
mm-hmm.
because we, the people of Bridgeport, do want to have, as Barbara suggested, a proper legal election. And I used to volunteer in Fairfield, and I came here to Bridgeport, and I volunteered here in Bridgeport, and I'm not looking for any jobs,
mm-hmm.
which Fairfield knew, and also the mayor of Bridgeport knows, because he was shocked that he had a senior volunteer who, he said, everybody's telling me what an incredible job you're doing, because I have a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stay calm.
Okay.
I wrote down, because the people of Bridgeport do want, and we deserve, a lawful, honest election. And I know for a fact, because one time I needed an absentee ballot, I had had an operation on my knees. And so, just like you said, people who truly need an absentee ballot, we can do it, people
sure.
of Bridgeport. It's easy. It's easy. But we're going to do it honest. I would like to say to the lady in the video, if she's listening, we all have to learn by our mistakes, all right? And I studied to be a teacher, and unfortunately, somehow, and there was another video where she said, I've got your back, Mayor. The mayor does not need that support. He knows me. He knows I met his family. I questioned him why he even wanted to do it a second time. And I said, I'll only support you if you could convince me. Well, he did. And that's why I became his senior volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I said, use my voice. Giant corporation used my voice. I said, everything that everybody hears me saying on the phone, I said, I could reach hundreds of people if you record my voice. He said, good idea, Dorothy. Well, this time around, I didn't have time, and I got a little. But what I'm trying to say, Paul, if other communities, Fairfield, Stratford, you name it, our neighbors can do it honestly, we can do it honestly.
Yeah.
And to the people that I really respect on the Republican Town Committee, I was on another town committee in Fairfield. It was a different party.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. The only reason why I volunteered and they found it out is because I want to see Bridgeport get back on its feet.
Yes. And Dorothy, I do have to move along, but thank you so much, Paul. That was very eloquent. Thank you. And again, maybe, you don't know. You hope for the best. Maybe the presence of this video does engender some more safeguards or some real change. Who knows? Dorothy, thank you. As we expected, the Gomes campaign has filed a lawsuit asking the court or a court to overturn Bridgeport's primary results. It happened early this morning, Tuesday morning. The idea is to ask a superior court to declare him the winner of last week's Democratic primary or order a new election as a result of alleged absentee ballot fraud in his contest against incumbent Mayor Joe Ganim. Against Mr. Ganim, that's Hugh McQuaid's article in the Connecticut News Junkie. A lot of people, as you would imagine, on both sides of the aisle have been weighing in on this. Stratford GOP State Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly is among them. Kevin, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
Kevin, you know, it's every day is something new, my friend. Kevin, let's start out here. I know there's already been kind of a back and forth here between the party chairs saying, hey, you know, this is an example that we have to tighten stuff up. And one party chair is saying, no, the rules are fine. It's just the people that we have the problem with. Give me your ascertainment of that, Kevin. And from afar, and you being an attorney, how do you view all this?
Well, quite frankly, I'm shocked to see what we saw in that video. Because it's disturbing. Now, we can get into the blame game, but what we have going on is a Democrat who was part of that primary bringing the allegation against his teammates and saying we need a court to come in and fix things. And I think what we've got now is, you know, over the years, there's been a lot of suspicion around Bridgeport elections, obviously. You saw what happened in 2019, and three individuals were referred over by the SEC to the state's attorney's office. Once again, the conduct appears to continue. But the difference now, Paul, is that we got it on tape. It's now not just the Republicans saying this is bad and the Democrats saying, no, there's nothing to see here. There's actually video surveillance that shows what was going on. And this is the problem. And the majority now is talking about, oh, we need a MAR board or an election monitor. But those election monitors look at what's happening on the inside once the election officials get the ballots.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with the current law in the state of Connecticut is, as Stephanie Thomas mentioned, there's some bad apples out there. Well, the bad apples under Connecticut law have the opportunity to corrupt the system. That's the problem. That's the threat to democracy. And that's what needs to be tightened up. And fortunately, right now, believe it or not, Paul, we have a special session next week to deal with election law.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually in a perfect position to actually deal with this issue now before the November elections. We know there's a problem. Let's address the problem, let's fix the problem, and protect the November election. This is not Republican or Democrat. This is about democracy itself.
Kevin,
and protecting the will of the people.
And Kevin, it's kind of understandable here, even for dummies like me. The law says that these absentee ballots, Kevin, can only be handled by police, by a family member, by a licensed caregiver, or by a local election official. So we have that already in place. What could be a possible fix here, Kevin? Do we, for example, if you look at what happened, what's alleged in that video, assuming it's not doctored in any way, do we mandate that these drop-off boxes be locked down? Do we mandate that they be all under video surveillance? I mean, what could we do here, Kevin, as addendums here to prevent some of these shenanigans?
Well, I think first and foremost, you could move them inside the building so that people drop them inside under the supervision of election officials so that people see what's going on. You don't see the same person coming in time and again with a handful of ballots as what appears to have occurred in the videotape for Bridgeport. We need to strengthen the process. And that's really what it's all about, is under our Constitution, every person, it's one person, one vote. That's the way we're all treated equally. When one person has more than one vote, well, that suppresses the voice of the rest of the people. And that's not right.
And Kevin, we, you know, hopefully this won't get any worse. Hopefully this is just an isolated situation. But again, you know as well as I do, by default, Kevin, we have write-in voting. We have voting by mail because of the expansion of absentee balloting, which you're allowed to do if you're only, you know, what is it? You're only afraid of being sick. So, as you say, with this special session coming up, I would imagine there could be a lot on the plate here. Now, do you anticipate getting any blowback or pushback on this?
Well, we're already getting pushback, Paul. I mean, they're trying to say that this is isolated when we know it's happened this year in Bridgeport, 4 years ago in Bridgeport, happened in 2010 in Bridgeport, as well as other years in Bridgeport. It happened in Stamford. It's happened election violations in West Haven. So this is not just an isolated incident, unfortunately. And the fact that the majority is talking about these like an election monitor is what we need to do to fix this doesn't address the problem. The problem is that we are opening up our electoral process to those bad apples that are known to the Secretary of State. And they're given the opportunity to corrupt the system. And that's really where we need to give our attention to focus on this, to make sure that the integrity of the ballot box is maintained. That will build trust. That will build confidence in the public. And it will start to push back on. I hear too often people say to me, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
My vote doesn't count. Well, that's why. When people go to the machines, as they did 4 years ago in Bridgeport, and a challenger wins on the machines and then loses on absentee ballots. And that's the norm. And that's a problem. Because
yeah.
It erodes the confidence of the people.
And, Kevin, that should not be a left or right or progressive or conservative or a Democrat or Republican problem. You're right. When there is a lack of when there is a lack of faith in the process, that's bad. And, Kevin, you've probably been reading these stories about, you know, all these people are scratching their heads. You know, look at the Hartford, for example, the Hartford mayor's race. And there's been nothing alleged there, but there was all this money spent, you know, a very interesting primary, and the turnout was lousy. I mean, what else could be the reason?
Well, this leads to that. And let's keep in mind that the person that is at the center of this is a well-known political operative in Bridgeport, so much so that in 2019, the Connecticut State Democratic Party actually gave her an award and celebrated her political activity. So this is something that's known through to the Democratic Party and is something that they hold up as this is what needs to be done at the local level. And that's what's disturbing is, as you say, these should be bipartisan, whether you're on the right or the left, and everyone in between should all come together and agree on the rules. That would build trust. That's why our caucus voted against many of the early voting initiatives, because it was made and passed by Democrats, and they didn't even take common sense suggestions like one of these. Listen to this one, Paul.
All right.
One of the issues was the leading cause of voter suppression is long wait lines. And this is like NYU. These are liberal think tanks giving us this information.
Mm-hmm.
So we offered an amendment that said wait times in Connecticut can be no longer than 30 minutes. The Democrats voted no. Voted no. And then when we said, okay, we're going to put our money where our mouth is, we're going to offer an amendment that says we're going to pay the community so that they can have the technology, they can employ the best election workers so that the people will have access to the ballots so they don't have to wait. And again, the majority votes no. So it's not like we were offering, you know, extremist ideas, which is what the Democrats like to characterize Republicans on this. We were actually offering common sense, reasonable, responsible amendments, which they voted no to. And then you see what happens in Bridgeport. People go to polls, they vote on the machines, and then it gets overturned by absentee ballots. That also suppresses the vote of people who show up, particularly if there's people voting more than once.
Well, Kevin, good luck in that special session, and we'll be watching from afar to see if this actually can shake the trees a little bit up there. Kevin Kelly, thanks. Drive safely, and we will talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go. Well, it's one thing I talk about all the time. Well, you know, long lines or voter oppression. Okay. Then pass, like Kevin said, pass something that says, listen, if the average wait times are 30 minutes or higher, then, you know, what? You make the municipality open another polling place. Hey, that firehouse or that school, you got to open that as a poll because too many people have moved into this district and it takes too long to vote. Why can't we do that? Oh, I don't know why. Because Trump. All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Megan Portfolio is with us. She writes the Hartford Portfolio, which you can gather and read in your leisure at the Yankee Institute, yankeeinstitute.org. Megan and I have chatted a bunch of weeks now about, we're not sure what this is, a mandate, a law, a recommendation that Connecticut eventually get rid of gasoline-powered vehicles. But this is all, Megan, right, based on some sort of California thing that Mr. Blumenthal once said we don't have to follow, or we do, or maybe. I'm confused, Megan. Help me out here.
Well, how you doing, by the way?
I'm good, Megan. How are you?
A little confused, but we'll get it. We'll work through this. So I've kept hearing activists and lawmakers talk about this phasing out of the new gas cars by 2035, and they kept touting that this was a bipartisan bill in 2004, and they only had one no vote. And I'm like, wait a minute. One no vote. You mean to tell me all you lawmakers voluntarily gave up all your power to a state on the other side of the country? So I had to go old school, and I had to go to the library and the state library and look in the card catalog.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. You pulled out. Is there still a card catalog somewhere? Oh, my God.
There's a card catalog.
Wow.
And I went into these old dusty rafters, and I found the transcript book of the original committee meeting back in 2004 when they were talking about this. And this is now, this is at the committee level. This hasn't even like got out of committee and got a vote yet.
Okay.
So this is the public hearing, and they talked to a bunch of activists, the Department of Energy. And then at the time, Senator Richard Blumenthal was the state's attorney general. And he was in favor of giving up our autonomy to California. And so he testified in favor of the bill to allow us to follow the California admission standards. And then he was asked two times, once by a Republican and once by a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean we have to follow every single thing that comes out of California? And he said, no, that would be basically unconstitutional, and we're not committed to follow California provision or California
Ooh.
Provision by provision. Now, I think he spoke out of school and wasn't correct, but the point is the lawmakers hearing this base their decision on us not having to follow everything California, you know, throws at us.
Yeah.
And they voted it out of committee and then eventually went on and got a vote in the House and then the Senate, and it passed. So fast forward till today, like, we're still bound by this law that these lawmakers voted for, but they voted for it with bad information. So it throws a little wrench into this whole scheme.
Now, that's interesting. Wow. So I'm just impressed you actually did something. Not a reflection on you, but I'm impressed there are card catalogs still around. My God. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much history here in the state that, I mean, they just haven't put everything online yet. So
yeah.
You have to go find your public act number, go to the catalog, pull out the card. It tells you where to look in the books. I remember doing this in high school, so it's nothing for me.
So do I. No, yeah. I remember, too. Hey, Dewey Decimal System. Remember that, Megan? My God. Jeez.
Oh, yes, sir.
So we still don't really know, because you and I have talked about this, you know, on two or three occasions now. And, you know, like I told you once, somebody asked me, and I told them, you know, they said, well, is this a mandate? And, right, Megan, nobody's really sure here. And now the governor is saying, because of all the fire and brimstone, you know, they heard from people at those public hearings a couple of weeks ago. Well, now maybe we should, try and codify this a little more? Is that what they're going to try and do?
I'm still waiting to get some info back, as I haven't really heard much since the public hearing. They did post all of the written testimonies, and I quickly counted. It looked like there was maybe 2,000-3,000 testimonies.
Wow.
And I started to do a count, and then I realized, you know, some knucklehead submitted the same testimony, like, you know, they were impatient and submitted it like 50 times. So it was screwing up my whole math, and
yeah.
Then I gave up on it. But I mean, there was a lot of testimony, a lot of people for it, a lot of people against it. And it's with this kind of a response, and then what I was able to find about the original intention of the legislation. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think the only right thing really to do is to bring this back into the legislature, have a vote, let the people weigh in, and then where the chips fall. But under this, you know, seeing what Dick Blumenthal has said, and he was attorney general, he's a smart guy, and he was right in his interpretation,
yeah.
Saying, like, you know, no state can bind another state. It's this a matter of constitutional principle. Like, I agree with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was 100% correct. Unfortunately, he wasn't correct, and it was an either you follow a federal admission standards or California. And by them passing this bill, we have to follow California.
All right. Well, thank God we don't do too much else that California does, but we'll continue to look at this. The column is called The Hartford Portfolio. It's at the Yankee Institute site. And, of course, Megan Portfolio joins us every Tuesday right around this time. Megan, thank you. Good on the heads up there. And we'll chat next week. Thank you.
All right. Have a great week, Paul.
You too. Thanks, Megan. Megan Portfolio. Yes, that's how it's spelled. And she writes The Hartford Portfolio and did some digging. How about that? She found testimony from 2004. Remember, folks, anything that's said at the Capitol, much the way it is in D.C., if you speak during a hearing or during an official session of the House or Senate, it's got to be in the record somewhere. So she went to the archive, 2004, what's that, 19 years ago, and she used a card catalog. Remember that? Dewey Decimal System, 134.73. It's great. I had a buddy of mine who was a high school librarian, and I used to fire, this is how much of a geek I was, I still am, I used to fire out, like, topics to him. I'd say, like, wheat farming. And he'd go, 374.22. He actually had a good amount of the Dewey Decimal System. memorize. I want to stick this in before we get to news, because you'll love this. You may have heard in the top of the hour news from our folks, friends at NBC. Eagle Pass. Now, we had a, it was John in Wallingford called us up earlier, said, well, you know, what about, when you're talking about Trump v. Biden, red versus blue, Eagle Pass, Texas, right? What? Why isn't there more talk about the border, which is a mess and continues to be? And you have all these blue cities now, all these sanctuary cities. Oh, my God, there's all these immigrants here. Yeah, there are. Eagle Pass, Texas. All right, now follow along here. There's going to be some audio coming up in a few seconds as well. I know you're excited. Eagle Pass, Texas is issuing an emergency declaration today to help combat the overwhelming number of illegal immigrants. Another busload of migrants has arrived in downtown Los Angeles from Texas. Now, over the weekend, the total number of arrests along the southwest border, one weekend, folks, one weekend, there are 52 weeks in a year, one weekend, one, 35,000 just came across the border. About that, huh? That's an average of nearly 9,000 a day. September numbers are on track to potentially set a new all-time record. So, there was a meeting in the city of Chicago a couple of days ago in a majority black neighborhood, and this is an African-American woman, right, talking to an African-American gentleman who apparently is a, he is a Border Patrol agent, or he represents CPB. And now all of a sudden, a lot of these folks, quite correctly, are saying, hey, what's this with all these migrants coming in from Texas?
I wanted to know if there is a capacity limit, and what is that limit, if there is one, and why can't we close the borders of Chicago or the state of Illinois in the first place? Why can't we close the borders?
I don't know if there's a limit. I do know that when you are seeking asylum, you are granted protections from the U.S. to not return. So that is the process that folks are going through when they come here and they get their interview, and then the Texas governor sends them to Illinois, and specifically Chicago.
So they get to come. Once they do an interview in Texas, they get to come regardless. Texas says you're an asylum seeker, you're being persecuted, so yeah, you can leave your country and come here and go wherever you want.
Not Texas. This is the federal government is the one that does the process around asylum seeking. It is Texas who is making the decision to send them to Chicago.
And that's what I wanted to know. Can we say, no, we won't take anymore?
It has to come from the federal government.
Oh, look at that. Somebody in a blue sanctuary city, they don't quite understand. What? Is that Texas doing that? No, ma'am. It's the federal government who lets them in. And then they show up in your sanctuary city. Yeah, see how that works?